Good evening. The time is 6 p.m. and you're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM here in the nation's capital, your Pacifica affiliate, available at 89.3 FM. And if you're way out there somewhere, you're in another state, maybe on the space station, wherever, as long as you can get internet access, you can go to WPFWFM.org or just WPFW.org. We'll get you there. And it's streaming live. If you've got friends, we're going to always have a great show. If you have friends, you might want to email your friends or advise your Facebook friends that we are on here talking about big and important things. My name's Garland Nixon, and I'm here with...
I am Mark Levine. Glad to be with you today.
And I'm here with also Sonia. Are you there, Sonia? Wait a minute. Sonia, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
And also Sonia Kumar. And she is an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union. And in the interest of transparency, I happen to be a member of the board for the state of Maryland affiliate.
I'm the only one that's not a card-carrying member here.
But you ought to be, Mark. ACLU guy.
I need to get the card. I do carry my Constitution with me, though, so I'm ready.
That's right. Well, it won't do you much good in Baltimore right now, Mark. I'll tell you that right now. But we've got big things to talk about. Tonight, we're going to talk about an interesting new law. Interesting may not be the word, the correct description, but there is a law that has been passed in Baltimore that is being instituted as we speak today, probably within the next 3 hours from now, I guess.
Is it just been passed, or is it...
It was passed about a month or so ago, but it goes into effect today.
Okay.
Yeah, and whereby they already have a curfew for minors, and they are going to expand this curfew so that it starts at 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and some other things. So let's start with Sonia. And Sonia, if you could tell our listeners about this curfew law. So first of all, just tell us about it, and then kind of just a brief synopsis of the problems that the ACLU has with it.
Sure. So the Baltimore already had a curfew that was in effect from 11 p.m. on weeknights and midnight on weekends, as well as a daytime curfew, which is like a truancy law, but also set us up the daytime curfew for now. So what the new law does is it expands the curfew to be among one of the most extreme in the country, because it starts at 9 p.m. for kids under 14 and 10 p.m. for kids 14 to 16. It also increases the penalty for parents from $300 to $500. Then there are various exceptions within the law. The new proposal also requires police to ask anyone they stop under the law for a valid identification.
So Sonia, Mark Levine here. If a kid's got band practice, or maybe they're trying out for a play. I was in some plays in school. They're 13 years old. They're in eighth grade. They're trying out for the high school play. They have a rehearsal, and it goes to 9:05, and they step outside of the school while waiting for their parents. They've broken the law?
So the law has exceptions for in various categories if you're accompanied by a parent.
No, but they're not accompanied. They're waiting for their parent on the street for their parent to pick them up.
For certain types of official activities. The problem is that you cannot identify by looking at a kid whether that kid is coming home from band practice, whether that kid is coming home from...
sports event.
Basketball or just wandering around, right? And so one of the issues is that although the law has exceptions written into them, the burden is on the kid to demonstrate that they fall within the exception. And so there's this sort of concern about that... sort of regard, even if you fall within the exception, you're still susceptible to being stopped by police.
So I have a question, real quick question for Mark, and I think it's important because Sonia and I are both very familiar with the this issue. We're familiar with this particular law, so our view is a bit jaded. Mark is just finding out about the law, but I know that Mark is opposed to the idea of curfews.
Curfews growing up.
Right. So
Nashville, Tennessee, there was a curfew. If you were under 18, you had to be in by midnight. I didn't think that was fair either.
So apart from the details of this particular curfew, Mark, maybe if you could enlighten us as to general, Mark is also an attorney. Generally, what is your problem with curfews?
Well, I think we have a right. It's freedom, basically, freedom of movement. We have a right to go where we want in America. This is a free country. If you're not doing anything wrong, if you're not breaking the law, the public streets and public sidewalks are for the public. And this idea that, kids shouldn't be out after. Well, I don't think it's the government's business where kids are or what they're doing. If they're doing something wrong, if they're, robbing somebody or selling drugs or something, that's different. That's against the law. But the idea that you can't be outside What if it's a pretty night and you want to look at the stars?
Right.
I mean, come on. You want to? I mean, if a park is closed, don't go in the park that's closed. But the idea that what if you want to go to a movie? I mean, it's interesting. This thing it's till 11 o'clock. If you're 17 years old. You're 17 years old. You can drive. You got a date. The movie gets out at 11:05. Now you can't go to a movie? I mean, it's draconian, and I don't even know what it solves. I don't even know what good it does.
Sonia, one of the issues I know is this, and, you know, a lot of my listeners know that I'm a former law enforcement officer, and that is that there are a lot of issues that could arise regarding police officers engaging with the youth on the street. They've got to talk to them. They've got to ask them questions. They got to supposedly figure out whether they're lying, whatever the case. Maybe you could let us talk a bit about some of the issues that you have, or that the ACLU has, with the issue of the law enforcement officers engaging these kids on the street, and some of the possible problems.
Sure. So, I mean, first, I just want to add something to what Mark was saying, which is that what the law does is really deprive parents of the ability to make individualized decisions about their kids and what makes sense for their kids. So if I think that my 13-year-old needs to be able to run around outside to run off a little extra steam, I should be able to do that without worrying that he's going to get picked up by the cops. But related to the law enforcement interaction...
And by the way, I just got to say, the summertime, the sun could go down after 9 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Right.
I mean, you're at the park, and you know, the kids want to go out in the swing set. I mean, what is the ostensible purpose of the law? Are they afraid someone's going to attack these kids, or what's
right? I think the thing that has been held out is examples of very young children out very, very late at night, like 1 or 2 in the morning. But the problem with that, of course, is that Baltimore already had a curfew covering those kids. So if there was some reason why we were not intervening already, that had nothing to do with expanding the law to put all kids under virtual house arrest as early as 9 p.m., but really about how we were choosing to enforce it. And one of the points that I think has really gotten lost in this is that law enforcement always have the authority in church to intervene if they perceive that somebody's in danger
right.
any time of day.
I mean, I presume if you've got a woman walking alone at night, a 30-year-old woman walking alone at night at 3 a.m. in an area where there's been a lot of crime and or rapes or whatever, and a police officer sees her, he might want to ask her. She'd be free to say no, but if she wanted an escort on the way home or something. I mean, here's the thing. If a kid's walking to his neighbor's house, you know, they live across the street, and they're both 13, and they want to go play PlayStation on a Friday night, and they're 13, they're 9, they can't even cross the street and go to their neighbors. I mean, right. When you think about the draconian impacts of this law, and then you have to ask yourself, well, what are the police going to do? Because,
right.
You know, some kids look younger than others. Are they going to make a judgment as to how old somebody is? Are they going to stop all 20-year-olds because they might look 17?
Right, so that's precisely one of the major concerns is that not only can you not tell how old somebody is by looking at them, you also, there are for a lot of these systems, there aren't ways to independently verify them. And so one of the things that was really instrumental in securing support for the law was the promise by the mayor and other city officials that the city was going to have these curfew centers that had very robust services that were like crisis intervention services for youth. They were going to operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and police could take youth to those centers in lieu of sort of detention centers or anything like that. However, it's now the eve, of the curfew, and the city's going to have 2 curfew centers, but they're only open on weekend nights. So there are 5 nights of the week when there's no curfew center open to take a kid.
I don't even like the name curfew center. If
I
you
know,
want to have, call it community center. You know, I remember, I guess it was 20 years ago now. God, I'm getting old. When Bill Clinton proposed community centers with midnight basketball games.
Right.
And I remember the Republicans opposed it, and they said, what a ridiculous waste of money to spend. It was like $10 million. It was a tiny amount of money in the scheme of things on community centers with midnight basketball games. And Bill Clinton said, well, it's better that they're playing basketball than being out on the streets. The idea that a kid out at midnight is by definition a criminal, I think it's really a problem. We should stop crime out there. I think
for us, one of the key concerns is that we're not actually even talking about midnight. We're talking about 9 p.m., which is
right.
the time of the day when there's a lot of sort of businesses are still open, stores are still open.
Movies!
Places are still open, right? So there are a lot of ways in which they're sort of really sort of mundane, everyday, totally sort of no.
I think Target's open till 10 p.m. Is
there ice cream in the summertime? If you get in mid-June, it's still it can be light until 9:20.
They can't watch the fireworks on July 4th.
Their ice cream trucks are still out. at 9 o'clock.
So one of the key issues here is sort of, you know, how. So one of the concerns that the ACLU has is sort of, okay, you know, with the law was passed over our sort of strenuous objections. Now the question is, okay, we have this law on the books that's incredibly broad. What specific sort of guidance and training has been provided to the law enforcement officers who are actually enforcing it about what the expectations are? So, I mean, we've already, you know, Garland alluded to the concerns about sort of, and Mark, you did too, about sort of how you identify that somebody is young enough to fall under the curfew.
And plus, if they're not 16, they don't have an ID. I mean, at least
right,
if you're, first of all, not you're not required to have an ID, but if you're not 16 and you don't have a driver's license, most 15-year-olds don't have an ID.
Well, I think something to remember is that a lot of youth and young adults in Baltimore don't drive and don't necessarily
right.
have driver's licenses. So one of the key concerns we have is actually also about kids who don't even fall under the curfew, but are that are young adults, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21, who might look a little younger, but don't necessarily carry ID, and are sort of, you know, what guidance has been given to police officers about what they do when they are confronted with somebody who isn't under, you know, says they're not under the age of the curfew but doesn't have ID, or is, you know, says they're coming home from an event but doesn't have any way of proving that they were coming home from an event. Similarly, you know, there's, I think, a well-documented issue of severe distrust, I think, between community members and the law enforcement community in Baltimore. And I've, you know, spoken with youth who will sort of freely say, I run at the sight of law enforcement, whether or not I've done anything wrong.
And let's be really honest here. And I'm saying this as a white guy, I think it's highly unlikely they're going to be policing that curfew in upper middle class white areas. I suspect they'll be enforcing that curfew as a way to round up kids that they think are selling drugs or they're just harassing poor
black
people.
Well, that's another important thing, Mark, and that is this, the issue of probable cause. The probable cause is they look at you and you look young. That's not much probable cause.
It isn't.
First of all, and it's not probable cause that a law has been violated. But at any rate, so now when law enforcement officers are out on the street and they may see some kid, he may be 19, he may be 18, and he's walking down the street and they want to, or he or she, and they decide, well, I just want to stop this person, but they have no probable cause. Now they're just going to, they can use
you
this
look young.
As instant probable cause
you look young.
And say, I can walk up to anybody I want on the street and detain them, question them, take them in if I want to, because they probably don't have identification. And all I have to say is, well, he looked like he was 15
to me.
And if
the cop says stop and the kid starts to run, now what happens? Can you shoot him
exactly.
in the feet? I mean, seriously, how far does it go? You looked like you were violating curfew. I'm now going to chase you,
Sonia,
tackle
if I,
you,
if
shoot
I,
you?
If you could, answer this question. I know that the ACLU had requested from the city any regulations, any rules, the answers to these questions, if in writing as to what they were going to do. And specifically how law enforcement officers were going, what policies, procedures, et cetera, that they were going to have to decide, can you chase off the kids? What can you do?
What are the policies on
have you gotten anything back yet from the city?
No, we haven't. And I want to sort of note that, you know, the city's had a lot of time to prepare for the law. I mean, there was the time leading up to it, and then, you know, 2 months, there was actually the typical amount of time, they usually have 30 days, they were actually given 60 days because to get the curfew centers up and running. So this was a foreseeable set of issues. And part of the reason, you know, there have been, the city officials have made sort of a range of public statements in the press, and part of the reason that we actually asked for materials in writing was because city officials were giving conflicting answers about what police had been instructed to do. So at this point, we haven't seen anything or gotten any sort of response from the city one way or the other than, you know, the sort of the statements that they've made to the public or to press saying, no, we've instructed officers this way or that way.
Now, it applies in the city of Baltimore, but it doesn't apply in the county of Baltimore around the city of Baltimore.
Correct.
So it applies in the inner city. It applies in the poor urban setting. It doesn't apply in the suburbs. What were the city leaders thinking? What did they say? Why did they want this? I'd be surprised, frankly, if the people of Baltimore even know this is happening. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
yeah,
they
wrong.
Do.
They know. They know.
They do know, and they support this?
It's been held out as a way to protect very young children, even though the law covers kids much older. And I think part of the problem is curfew laws tend to have this sort of broad, intuitive appeal for adults because, we want kids to be safe. Of course, you know, it's sort of at first glance, it's like, oh, kids shouldn't be out on the dangerous streets late at night. But when we step back and say, okay, wait, what does that really mean? What is the problem we're trying to solve? There are far more sort of nuanced and responsible ways to respond to concerns about youth safety or youth.
See, I think you're blaming the victim. You're saying kids are helpless at night, they might be harmed. Rather than stop the people who might harm them, let's stop the victims from being out on the street at night. Well, you can make an argument that women shouldn't be on the street either.
Well, there's another part of that because one of the things that it's the law apparently assumes is that if a child or a youth is violating the curfew law, that it's because of bad parenting and they need counseling because they can get a citation and there's a fine up to $500.
Which most of these parents can't afford.
Which they can avoid by going to counseling. So it makes an assumption that any child that's out for any reason, for instance, leaving this anime convention at 11 or 12 or, 9:01 tonight, that the reason that they're out is because of bad parenting, they need counseling.
Who pays for the counseling? I assume the parent.
This is a great you're really getting at an important point here, which is that there are, this law has really been sort of sold on a lot of these, I think, implicit assumptions about what it means for a young person to be outside. It's been sold on sort of stereotypes about sort of abusive and neglectful parents. If your kid's outside late at night, it must be because you're neglecting them, not necessarily, for example, because you're working and you're relying on an older sibling to help watch a younger sibling, and guess what, siblings don't always do exactly what they're told, or that there might be some other totally legitimate reason, like maybe you don't have AC in your tiny apartment, and maybe your kid needs to run off steam. I mean, there are a lot of assumptions here, and I think.
Sonia, how does the law work? If a police officer sees a 13-year-old out at 9:15 p.m. or sees a 17-year-old out at 11:05 p.m., what are they supposed to do? What are they allowed to do?
The law says that they either first they stop, ask for ID, and then they are supposed to either take the young person home or to what the city's calling the curfew center, youth connection centers, taking them to one of the youth connection centers.
What if they don't have ID? What do the police do?
We don't know. I think what the police commissioner has said is police officers will decide whether or not the kid's lying.
For those of you...
Really? Yeah. The police officer will decide whether or not the kid's lying.
For those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to 89.3 FM WPFW here in Baltimore, Maryland. Baltimore, my gosh, we're in Washington, D.C.
We are in Washington, D.C. But in a 50,000-watt station, people in Baltimore can hear this show.
This is
really good because, we often talk about things that are going on in the Washington, D.C. area and Northern Virginia. This reaches out to our audience in Baltimore that we don't often talk to a lot. Welcome, Baltimore. We'd really like to hear from you. If you disagree with us, call in and let us know.
We'll put the number out at 6:30, but we're talking with Sonia Kumar, who is an attorney, and of course our beloved Mark Levine, who is also an attorney. Sonia's with the ACLU, and we're talking about a new law that was passed in Baltimore that goes into effect today, a very broad curfew law for youths that starts at 9 p.m. In the evening, 9 p.m.
Let's give it out. So if you're 14 to 17, if you're under 14, you can't be out after 9 p.m.
Right.
At all. You can't be outside. And if you are 17, you can't be out after 11 p.m. If you've got a date, if you're 17 and you're a senior in high school and you're going out with a date to a movie, that movie not only better get out by 11, it better get out by 10:30, because if you're driving home, and you stop, for an ice cream or something, you can be arrested.
Well, actually, this is the thing. You can't stop. So there's an exception, for example, if a young person's coming home from work. But you're not allowed to you're only allowed to come straight home from work. You're not allowed to stop.
What if you've gone to a movie on Friday night? This applies on Saturday night. You can't be out on Saturday night after 11 o'clock. It's going to harm a lot of businesses.
Now listen to this. It says there's exceptions. It does not apply. Listen to this. Attending or without any detour or stop, going to or returning from an official school, religious, or other recreational activity supervised by adults, sponsored by the city, a civic organization, or another similar entity.
No going to movies.
Responsibility for the minor. But here's the issue is this, Sonia. They've got these exceptions, but again, when a police officer starts talking to a 14-year-old child, how is the 14 the onus is on the 14 or 13 or 12-year-old child to prove where they're coming from, what they're doing, all of these other things? How does a kid prove this?
We don't know. I mean, this is one of the one of the things that city officials have suggested is that organizations should somehow register with the city, although it's not clear with whom you'd register. They've said maybe when we have, like, look, the city puts on events that go past 9 p.m. They're saying we're going to provide wristbands. No, they're saying we're going to provide wristbands. I mean, it's sort of, it's so
they better not watch fireworks on July 4th because they're after 9 p.m. and it's clearly unpatriotic for a 13-year-old to watch fireworks on July 4th. And by the way, you say parents. What is it, any adult, or does it have to be parents? What if they're with...
The law is written so it's parent or someone, I think, who has lawful custody of the child. The person, I think,
what if they're with their grandparents? Or their aunt or uncle? Or their older sister who's 20 years old?
Right, and another great... I mean, an older... So a 17-year-old, for example, can't be watching his 14-year-old brother.
Right.
That's right. And so, and of course, you know, again, how do you prove it? And I think one of the really, you know, one of the things that's been the mayor and the city officials who are really sort of going to bat for this law have said, look, that their intention is not to criminalize kids. Their intention is to protect the most vulnerable kids. However, none of the evidence out there says that curfew laws and using police to be sort of pseudo-social workers is the way to do that. In fact, kids who are traumatized are often going to flee from authority figures. They've often been traumatized at the hands of authority figures.
Why not put the money into real social workers who can go out if they see a kid who they think is in danger and say, hey, son, is everything okay? Just ask them.
One of the great ironies, actually, is that the curfew center, the youth connection centers they're operating, are on the site of closed recreation centers.
How ironic is that? So they've got money to lock the kids up, but they don't have money to provide recreation. Well, excuse me.
It's a lot more expensive.
No, let me change this.
Them up.
They've used them. They have the money for recreation,
right,
but they decided to use it to lock them up.
Because kids would rather be in a jail cell than playing basketball late at night.
To be fair, they're not holding cells at the curfew centers. But the idea is, you know, sort of again, like it's just this false one that. It's sort of not the robust services that were promised at the outset. I think at this point, you know, what they've sort of said publicly they're definitely being offered are sort of screenings of some kind, referrals to child protective services for any kid that's under 13 that's found in violation of the curfew. So if you were 12 and outside at 9:30, you're automatically referred to child protective services.
Oh, my God. So you could lose custody of your child because your 13-year-old is out after 9 p.m.
Yeah, chasing lightning bugs.
Yeah, chasing lightning bugs. That's what I used to do.
Yeah. Now here's the thing about...
Juvenile delinquent.
One of the things that
I poked holes in the jar.
Well, you are, in fact.
I let air in.
You were a juvenile delinquent.
Don't tase me, bro. I let the air in. The lightning bugs could breathe. Come on.
The one of the things that we've been discussing is that this is based on basically flawed assumptions. So they made some legislative findings that I'd like to read these findings to you.
And just so you know, those findings are from 20 years ago.
Right.
When the law was...
So it says, legislating fine. Here's one. The increase in juvenile delinquency has been caused in part by the large number of minors who are permitted to remain in public places during night hours without adult supervision. And here's the other finding. And this is the one that I have particular problems with. The problem of juvenile delinquency can be reduced by regulating the hours to which minors may remain in public places and in certain establishments.
Now, I bet you could stop most all crime by just requiring all human beings to stay.
And here's the thing about it. They have produced no evidence that will reduce crime. They say, if we do this, it will reduce juvenile delinquency. However, the fact of the matter is, the ACLU, if I'm not mistaken, Komar, didn't the ACLU cite a study that was supported by the National Institute of Justice that said that their conclusion was that curfew laws had no effect on reducing the victimization and delinquency of youths?
Yeah, so to the extent it's been studied, there's not that much research out there, but the research that is out there really doesn't sort of corroborate the idea that curfews make us safer. And I think part of that is actually because we're making a lot of assumptions about sort of when kids are harmed and who they're harmed by. Actually, kids are more likely to be harmed by somebody they know. They're most likely to be injured actually in the hours immediately after school.
Yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah, and so, again, this goes to sort of, I mean, I think the political appeal of a very broad sort of sweeping statement, like a symbolic gesture where we are doing something, but that in the end leaves the most vulnerable kids still vulnerable and risks the criminalization of a whole other class of kids.
Sonia, give me the nuts and bolts of how this works. So we've got two seniors in high school. They're both a couple months short of their 18th birthday. They decide to go to a movie, okay? The movie lets out at 11:05. They're walking back to their car from the movie. The police can go up to them and do what?
Well, so the law only goes up to 16, but so let's say you're 16.
Okay, fine. You're a junior. That's fine.
I thought
it went up to 17. No?
No. So they asked for your information. They asked what you were doing.
We were at a movie, officer. Now what happens?
I'm not sure, Mark. I mean, I think it's a lot. There's a ton of discretion left for the officer. Like, it's not even clear what the city wants officers to do in that scenario. I think a lot of statements have been made by the folks at the top. Oh, that's not who we're targeting with this.
But what do they have the right to do? So let's say you've got a cop that's, let's say, a little zealous. It's like, not enough, it's 11:05, and you're 16 years old. I'm going to throw the book at you. What can the cop do?
The kid can essentially take the young, the officer can take the young people into custody and take them to the curfew center where they are then screened in some way. It's not clear, one of our questions was, are they going to be running everybody's names through databases?
Well, are they going to handcuff them? Are they going to search them? You know, you got to search for weapons. We got to feel them up.
There's been a lot of statements. When we first started asking these questions, there have been these sort of very strident statements that officers, of course, are not going to handcuff kids. However,
that's not written anywhere, is it?
We haven't gotten anything in writing that says that. And I think more importantly, we've also heard statements that kids aren't free to decline to go. So if a young person is unwilling, does not voluntarily want to go with an officer, there is, in our minds, still a very gaping question about what happens then. Is the officer going to use force, restraints of any kind?
And let me comment on that, because I'm a former law enforcement officer, and I wrote policies and directives on this. The bottom line is this. Police officers will have a policy, SOP, standard operating procedures, directive manual, policy manuals, etc. And they are broad. So currently, for instance, most agencies will have a handcuffing policy. Generally, they say that anyone you arrest has to be handcuffed behind their back. It is applied to everyone. If you don't come up with a new policy, the officers, that's why every now and then you'll see something, like this, some kids will come into some police officers will come into an elementary school and arrest an 8-year-old, and they'll handcuff the child and take him out, and people will freak out. Well, the reason is because those officers have a handcuffing policy that says anyone that you arrest will be handcuffed behind your back. So my point that I'm making is this. The policies, when it comes to use of force policy and when it comes to handcuffing and things of that nature that are used for everyone else, are the same policies that will be used for these children in the absence of a new policy. And to date, the city has not produced evidence of any unique policies that will be applied to these youths.
And I've got the statute right in front of me, the police ordinance section. Real quick, C23 says that you can't be out after 10 if you're 16 years old. If it's a weeknight. So if it's Thursday night, you can't be out at 10:05 p.m. and you're 16 years old.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
We're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Sonia Kumar with the ACLU and, of course, Garland Nixon and Mark Levine. And we're talking about the new very broad curfew that went into effect today in Baltimore City. It's something you want to something you really want to listen to. Also, let me get off the number, 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. If you want to talk to Mark and Sonia.
You don't have to agree with us. You can disagree with all of us. Bring it on. We want to hear from
you. Hold on there, Sonia. We'll be back in 1 minute.
Sure.
Welcome back to News Views. My name is Garland Nixon, and I'm here with
Mark Levine
and Sonia Kumar with the American Civil Liberties Union of Maryland. We're talking about the very interesting and unique curfew law that's been passed in Washington D.C. And I'm looking
at Baltimore City.
I'm looking over there. The lines are all lighting up, and I'm like, wow, people are very interested in that.
And folks, if you defend this, we want to hear from you. Just because Garland and I and Sonia don't like it doesn't mean if you do. In fact, I'd like to hear an argument for it because I'm very suspicious of this law. But we really want to hear from people whether you agree or disagree.
Yeah, so it's in Baltimore City, a broad law that will basically kids under 14 will not be able to be on the streets after 9, and it's 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. But it also broadens the daytime, what were the truancy laws, from 9 a.m. to 7:30 a.m. You know, what's
kids can't really be out at all.
Yeah, no. What's interesting?
Their parents complain they're sitting in front of the TV all the time, but apparently they're not allowed to be out.
If they go out the door, they're going to be locked up. So, well, Sonia, are you ready to take a couple calls? I'm sure we have some questions from our mini Bill, by the way, over there on all the our engineer over there running all the phones and sliding the slides and pushing all the blinky buttons is Bill Weatherspoon, and Bill does a fantastic job and keeps us on the air.
202-588-0893 if you want to call in. I'm just reading here. Just real quick, Sonia, a person 18 years or older they can be with who is legally responsible for the care and custody of a minor. Legally responsible. Isn't that only a parent or guardian?
It's not clear.
Okay. Could it be a friend's parent? Could it be a grandparent? I mean, it's crazy. All right, go ahead.
Okay, so we're going to start. Sonia, we're going to take some calls. We're going to start with Youssef. Youssef, welcome to WPFW. Youssef?
Good evening. Good evening. Yes, how you doing?
Good evening, Youssef.
What's your question, Youssef, or comment?
Comment. I just wanted to say, first of all, I want to say that the WPFW has a wide and large listenership in Baltimore. In fact, a lot of people who live in Baltimore used to live in D.C., like myself.
Wonderful.
And then a lot of people listen online. So yeah, we always listen to the PFW.
And we're glad to have you, Baltimore listeners.
Right on,
thank you.
Right on. I'm going to say this. I'm glad to see that you brought this subject up because I've listened to a couple of talk shows here at Morgan and another show. Nobody's even talked about this today, at least on the radio this evening. I don't know about earlier today or whatever. I don't think so. But the law in itself is I disagree with it, and it's going to create contention in the community, especially in the poor communities, I believe. But one of the things that it does is it allows the police department to gather more information on young men, as has been the policy for decades, to catch young men, find out who they are, where they live at, because they always have to, from others' eyes, have the potential to become a part of, illicit interest.
Yeah, they're always a suspect, basically.
Right, exactly.
When did it become a crime to be young? I didn't realize that was against the law.
Excuse me?
When did it become a crime to be under 17? I didn't realize that was against the law to be a child.
It's absurd, as you said a couple of times very very emphatically. It makes no sense other than it will gather a lot of more information about young, poor people primarily. And as you mentioned, this is not applying in Baltimore County. It's not applying anywhere else in the state of Maryland.
Yep.
It's
dangerous is what it is. It is police state all over it.
Thank you very much, Youssef. Sonia, if you could comment, you know, Youssef had a very, very, a reasonable concern of the issue of racial disparity, the issue of, you know, now police gathering more information or placing young black males under, you know, jeopardy of becoming part of the criminal justice system even more so than now. Do you have any thoughts or comments on that,
you considered? Absolutely. I think that, you know, the law invites sort of interactions where none were existed before, where literally somebody's just outside, the officer can articulate reasonable suspicion of any wrongdoing or any concern that somebody's in danger. But I want to say, not only are we talking about sort of this ability to now use the law as a pretext to stop older young people and ask them what they're doing. But also, you know, for those young people who come in contact, their families are also becoming subject to these court systems and court interventions and questions about what were you doing, why weren't you with your child. All of these ways in which this sort of monitoring and intervention by the state is happening, not just with the kids and not just with young men, but with also mothers and other caregivers.
You're right, because someone could possibly use this information to say, you know, if there were, for instance, a custody battle and a person were a perfectly good parent.
But, oh my God, their 16-year-old saw a movie after 10 p.m.
Yep.
on a Thursday.
It was coming from an anime festival tonight or tomorrow night and got grabbed up. And
now
even
you
though,
lose custody of your child.
Yeah. Yeah, and the whoever is going against you, basically, or opposing you, says, well, they let their child run the streets all times of night, so much so that the police had to come get him, but it was 9:01 p.m.
You know what? It's also a crime for the parents.
Yes.
Section 34-5 says it's unlawful for the parent of any minor to knowingly permit or by insufficient control to allow that minor to be in or about any public place or any establishment if it violates this law. So if you watch out, don't let your kids see movies after 10 p.m. or you are in violation of the law.
And think about this also, and I think this is important. Let's say someone is convicted, is basically found to be in violation of the law, and they maybe don't make the appointments they're supposed to make, or they don't make the counseling sessions, whatever the case may be. If they apply for a job as
they could apply for a job as a janitor in the school system or something like that,
or they could apply for a job and someone looks and says, well, wait a minute, you know, there's something here on your record involving children and...
What about the question, have you ever been arrested? You know, if you're 20 years old and you're arrested because they think you're 17, you've done nothing wrong, but you're arrested because, you know, your cop, you don't have your ID with you. You're out at the public park next to your house. And now you have to answer that question. Yes, I've been arrested, but the cop got it wrong. How many employers are going to say, oh, we don't want anyone that checks that box? Yes. I mean, the possible repercussions are astounding. They really are.
I think, and that's something I want to talk about briefly, because I think the sponsors and supporters of the folks who really led the charge on this have sort of defended it by saying that's not our intention.
Oh,
our intention
how nice.
Is not for it to be used that way. And whether or not that is accurate, the truth is that that risk exists. And sort of I think, you know, what has been upsetting to those of us, especially with connections to sort of with youth and youth-serving programs, is that there is so much evidence out there about what we actually do need and what we should be doing to support
right.
youth. And this law is really a distraction from that. So, you know, homeless youth in the city, providers have been saying, you know, until they're blue in the face, we need more shelter beds for those kids. We need supportive services. We need peer outreach. And the communities have been begging for rec centers to be opened back up. There are so many things that would be a better use of city resources and city time that would actually and more sort of effectively identify and support youth that we know are in need.
We're going to take a couple more callers. Theo, welcome to WPFW, and what is your comment or question?
Yeah, hi. I'm a Baltimore resident this evening. I listen to your show all the time when I'm in my car.
Thank you.
But I'm sure that, first of all, the obvious problem with this law is it's so unwieldy to begin with. And although the young lady, the attorney who's helping, isn't mentioned, the real reason for all this is they don't want black kids downtown
that's
in the Inner
I
Harbor.
Think.
That's exactly. That's
what
all it is.
So you know what? Close the Inner Harbor at night. Just close it. Close it. Get rid of all those tourists. You know what? You could even make a law that says you could say the Inner Harbor after 11 p.m. You got to have your parent with you, or you have an adult with you if you're going to be at the Inner Harbor. I don't support that, but you could make a narrowly tailored ordinance to deal with that particular situation.
Or how about one of those South African test books that would allow you to cut? But here's another point. It seems to me that a child. A youngster who's 15 can simply just refuse to go with the cop. And the first time a child is manhandled, believe me, even though Baltimoreans seem to not care about this law, there's going to be a big problem.
Yeah, I really fear it.
I guarantee that. Well, anyway, it's good talking to you, and it's a good show.
You know,
thanks, Dale.
And the reality is these kids are legitimately, a lot of these children are legitimately afraid of law enforcement. There is a history in Baltimore City, I guess I don't know that we need to get into it, but of some issues with people being arrested who weren't necessarily guilty of crimes. Sonia, did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, that's not just a history. There's an ongoing, very palpable sort of energy right now around sort of a lack of trust with the law enforcement officer. People have been calling for reform of the Civilian Review Board. There have been very high profile, very tense sort of emotions in the wake of death involving law enforcement officers in Baltimore. There is, you know, and tasing, you know, there was a tasing of a young person at Inner Harbor, a tasing of a young person at a hospital who died from the tasing. So I think, you know, one of the things that that people are reacting to is this sort of uncertainty about how these acts interactions unfold and the history and the sort of reality that they often go awry very quickly.
Yeah.
Very quickly.
I'm reading about the penalties in the law here. And, you know, send the parents to family counseling sessions, charge them $500, or make them go to community service. You know, all right, I admit it. I have been known to drive fast on the highways. I will concede that's the only law I've ever broken, but I admit I have exceeded the nation's speed limit. Sorry. And I've gone to traffic school. And I knew everything that was at the traffic school. I knowingly went faster than I should have. You know, these parents are not going to, I'm a bad parent. My kid went out after 10 to see a movie. What are they going to train? What are they going to train these parents to do?
Well, not even that, but I think, look, I mean, sometimes interventions like this can actually aggravate delicate family situations
true
already,
right?
I mean, you can think about, like, I already have maybe, you know, there's already tension in my relationship with my kid. It may not be something that can be addressed through counseling. There are a lot of ways in which families, kids, parents engage in self-help by creating space between them when you just need it. I mean, I think anybody who has raised a teenager has been like, I need that space.
Yeah, the kid walks out of the house to fume a bit and stands out,
in
the yard.
And that's sort of what is developmentally appropriate at that age. And I think, you know, one of the things we've heard from young people who have had sort of more difficult family backgrounds sometimes is like, you know, some parents are going to be really upset at being called to the curfew center, and that is going to set off sort of a whole lot of...
Some parents may beat their kids because of this, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah. And
I mean, it's not only that, but like the parents, you know, might be upset with the folks who've taken the kids into custody.
Right.
I mean, it's just sort of inviting for worsening the relationship.
Don't we have enough real problems for society to deal with? I mean, don't we have enough real crimes of violence? Don't we have enough guns on the streets? Aren't there better things our police officers should be doing?
Here's the other part of it too that really, and we're gonna go to take another call in a second, and that is that you have a limited number of law enforcement officers.
Sure.
If you've got say 15 officers in a given area, and one, two, three, four of these officers you now have 10. The fact of the matter is, this is counterproductive to dealing with. You've got shootings, violent crimes. The people are saying, we want to do something about all of these shootings and this violent crime. And the answer is, we're going to take...
Sorry, we're busy handling Johnny, who's out after 10 p.m.
Yeah, you've got a 911 call, and they have nobody to send because they're all down at the youth center checking in their kids. It's counterproductive. Let's... RG, welcome to WPFW. Your question or comment.
Hello, RG.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air, RG. What's happening?
Gentlemen, how you doing this evening?
Hey, we're good.
All right. Just wanted to weigh in
Please do.
Yes. How does this tie into the new ID requirement? And let's expand the scope of the discussion a bit just to adults and everybody that has to get a new ID. I guess maybe Mark or Garland, one of you might be able to...
I know there's a new ID law in Virginia. Is there one in Maryland, Garland?
Not that I know of.
Okay, I think we're talking about two different states. There's a new ID for voting law in Virginia that I could talk about, but this is curfew law.
There's a new ID requirement in D.C. as well. The next time around, you have to replace it with the government-sanctioned ID card, and I'm trying to figure out what the parameters of that ID card would be that the existing ones don't cover.
I don't know that this applies in Maryland. I don't think this is actually relevant. It's
yeah,
an important issue we should discuss on another day, but I don't think it's relevant
question. When you talk about kids that are 12, 13, 14, 15...
Yeah, they don't even have IDs.
I didn't have an ID.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Don't have an ID. So
I didn't have an ID until I had a driver's license.
Right, so basically... go ahead, Sonia.
I also just think, you know, not only that, I think, you know, there's a tendency to focus on a kid's covered under the age of the law, but again, look, I'm involved with a youth serving organization, and a lot of the young people in our program are young adults who are 20 or 21, and they talk about being stopped during the day for the daytime curfew, I think there are a lot of young adults, especially vulnerable young adults, who do not carry identification.
You know, I can imagine you're late. You know, you're 18 years old and you're late. You're trying to get to your job, mm-hmm. which is very important because, you know, and you're trying to get to your job. You're running because you're late.
Mm-hmm.
And the cop stops you because you look young. You're like, officer, I'm running to my job. Officer, give me ID. Now, we get that whole thing, even if you prove to the cop who you are, you're 20 minutes late to your job and you're fired.
Well, my daughter, when she was 21, looked 16. She looked very, very young. And she went to the University of Baltimore.
This is discrimination against short people. Yeah. That's what this is.
Well, she was tall and skinny as a rail. She looked like she was 16. But she went to the University of Baltimore. Uh-huh. So if she stops and she's walking down the street or walks to that subway down the, whatever the case may be, if she's walking around downtown or she stops to get something to eat and she looked very young, and it would many times, it, you know, the class may get out at 8:45 or whatever, she would be in jeopardy to be nabbed. And since she looked young, they could just say, well, you know, you look like you're 16 or 15.
This is a way to harass young people. It's hard enough to be a teenager these days without having to avoid the police.
And the feeling is amongst a lot of people that it's more likely to be applied to people of color. Likely to be applied to people in poor neighborhoods.
Yeah, why isn't it in Baltimore County, huh? Why is it only in Baltimore City?
I think, just to make two points there. One is that the, you know, young people who are more vulnerable and are upside, I mean, I think it's not just sort of what happens once. It's that you're going to be, you risk being stopped many, many times. And that is a lot of frustration among young people. And actually, in the course when we were sort of talking with city officials and sort of pushing them not to adopt the law, there were sort of very high-profile city officials who sort of freely admitted, they're like, yeah, when I wear good clothes, when I wear nice clothes, I don't get stopped. But when I wear my regular street clothes, I get stopped.
You know, New York just elected a new mayor based on largely on complaints about stop and frisk of people, mostly black men, mostly young black men.
And Latino.
And Latino, sure, who were stopped and frisked all the time, no matter what they were doing. And you know, it seems to me that if the police officers do stop a 16 or 17-year-old, you're a cop, Garland. I mean, I assume you got to be careful. You got to frisk them for weapons.
Absolutely.
And so now, think about it, parents. Your 13-year-old is coming home, and they've been felt up and down by a police officer. I wonder how you feel about that,
Sonia, parents. This basically is stop and frisk for kids, isn't it?
I think on some level there's a real fear that that's what it sort of quickly turns into that. And I think, you know, to the point about the racial disparities, look, there's extraordinary evidence that our laws are really disproportionately applied to people of color. Especially African Americans in Baltimore. Look, the youth jail is 99% full of black kids, and that's not just, you know, the initial response I'm going to get to that is like, well, they're committing more crimes. That's not the case. And for marijuana laws, where there's a lot of evidence that rates of youth are comparable, the arrest rate is 97% African-American kids.
And God help the 60-year-old black boy who's got a bit of an anger issue and takes a swing at a cop. He may end up dead.
Yeah.
He may end up dead.
And that's been one of the real concerns, is sort of that the frustration that exists, the fear that exists, will and sort of also just sort of the sort of hot-bloodedness of adolescence will predictably lead to situations where young people are disobeying, refusing to accompany an officer, cursing, and that will lead to arrest.
Well, teenagers always obey authority, don't they, folks?
Not only that, I mean, just look at what happened in New York with the chokehold, when a guy wasn't even really fighting back. I mean, there's the possibility there of somebody. Well, let's take a couple quick calls. We don't have much time, but the people did call. And let's go to Ike. Let's go to Tesla.
Good evening, my friend.
Tesla, we got a couple calls, so if you could kind of get to the point kind of fast, because I do want to get our other people in. Hate to rush you.
Okay. Restricting or arresting somebody is done to correct a behavior which society doesn't like. Prisons are called correction facilities.
Right. Should be for a crime, not for existing. Exactly.
Okay. So when you target a certain group, particularly one group, the arrest or the restriction doesn't change behavior, because that group feels targeted. When someone feels targeted, the reaction is to fight against the law.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Tesla.
Let me finish.
Unfortunately, we've only got a couple minutes,
so we're going to go.
We want to give our other callers a chance. Ike, welcome to WPFW.
Hey.
Hey, Ike.
I appreciate y'all, man. This is great. I'm from Baltimore, right?
Okay.
When I was 14, I had my workers permit, so I was working at an Afro-American at night, after school. I graduated from City High School at 16. I went in the Army at 16. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And when I see three thugs come from the president of Honduras, El Salvador, and that other country down there.
Guatemala.
They gave them $80 billion apiece. $80 million apiece, so they can help those children come back home. And you mean to tell me that the federal government can't stretch out and find a piece of money to put them kids in Baltimore City to work? Something wrong with this problem, man.
Thank you very much, Ike. And last caller of the day, Mary. Mary, welcome to WPFW.
Yes, how's everybody?
Thanks Fantastic. For calling in, Mary.
Thank you.
I just have a question. Do you think that they did this because, first of all, that they can't handle the problem, and they're sending a message thinking that they got some jacked up parents in Baltimore City that aren't doing their job, or is this has anything to do with the 12 o'clock boys? And I'll hang up.
What's the 12 o'clock boys?
The 12 o'clock boys. Do you know who the 12 o'clock boys are?
I don't. I'm sorry.
They're the boys that get on those bikes and do those stunts and go up and down
the dirt road bikes.
And the police.
Well, think about this, Mary. If they're 12 o'clock, they extended the law from 9 to 11. So even
they're out 24 hours a day on those bikes.
So
they can't handle them. So they're trying to send a message that parents aren't doing their
job. And here's the truth. Here's the reality about that. If they're out on a dirt bike with no tags, it's already illegal. So you don't need any laws other than the ones that you have now. Then that's a point Mark was making, isn't it, Sonia? That they're
you can have narrowly tailored laws to deal with specific.
And if
you want to close a park at night and the kids are in the park and they can't be there after dark, then arrest the kids.
And if someone's violating the law, there are ample laws.
But I do want to get to this point about parents, because I think it's something that's come up over and over again, and I think it's absolutely true that there's a lot of stereotyping about parents and what, you know, sending messages to parents. But the truth is, like, for example, all these kids, these young kids that we're worried about, they're in school.
Mm-hmm.
Schools know who the kids are that need supportive services. We know, it is not secret to people. And what is problematic is that there are a lot of ways in which communities and churches and other organizations are supporting people, supporting, you know, providing those supports and doing informal ways. And, you know, one of the things that has come up a lot is, like, you know, the law provides exemptions for these organized activities. But, you know, what if you live in a neighborhood where there aren't organized activities?
Exactly.
What if the kids are organizing them themselves? You know?
Right. What if it's kickball in the street on the summer night? You know,
and this is something, you know, everybody assumes that people who are poor aren't working. It's just the opposite. Most of the time, people who are poor are working two and three jobs. So what happens when you have a parent, again, some of this money could be used to help with child care, things of that nature.
Social
so you have a person who is
the money.
You have a person who is working a couple jobs who can't afford child care.
Right.
And now they're going, if their
now
child
they got a $500 fine.
Right.
What are they going to do? They're going to hit the kid
or
the
they're
going to run away from home. Imagine all the pathologies that already exist.
Right. Are they going to quit their evening job because they have to stay home and watch the kid? But they're going to be homeless now because that's the only way they can
and,
pay their rent.
One thing I did notice, quick, Garland, is that it says they have to return the minor to the minor's home. What if the minor has no home?
That's the other part. If they're homeless, well, they're already in violation of the law.
I guess so. It's against the law to be homeless now.
Sonia, thank you very much. We're just about out of time, but I certainly want to thank you. If someone wants to find out more, get in touch with the ACLU, give you information, call in to say what experience that they or their children have had, or email. How can they contact you?
We have a main line. It's 410-889-8555. We are really anxious to hear from people about what their experiences are.
You should hold a protest in Baltimore and get a bunch of our listeners out there. We'll support it.
Thank you very much, Sonia, and I'll be in touch soon. Mark, if someone wants to get in touch with you.
Go to marklevinetalk.com. Follow me on Facebook, Mark Levine Talk, at Twitter. Twitter is at Mark Levine Talk, MarkLevineTalk. Lots to talk about. Follow me.
If they want to get in touch with me on Twitter, I'm at Garland Nixon. On Facebook, Garland Nixon. Or you can email me, GarlandN. And the end, of course, is for Nixon. GarlandN@gmail.com. I want to thank Mark. As always, I want to thank Sonia Kumar and the American Civil Liberties Union of Maryland. And, of course, I want to thank WPFW and all of
our
listeners. And Bill Witherspoon, for goodness sake.
He does a terrific job behind the boards. And coming up next is Robin's Place. To calm us all down a little bit.
WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington, D.C., your Pacifica affiliate.
Thanks for listening to the just completed Public Affairs or News program. As a listener-sponsored community radio station, WPFW appreciates your feedback, whether favorable or otherwise. To provide your feedback, even if it is regarding one of our many music programs, simply email us at info@wpfw.org. That's info@wpfw.org. Thanks.